Man Show, Thursday, 7 p.m. on CJSF 90.1 FM with your host, DJ Medi. Hey, that's me. We'll be interviewing fans, musicians from all genres and all languages, and other talents too, like photographers and videographers. We'll check out local businesses, cheap eats, and yummy treats. And also events that are happening or not happening around town. And places to go and get some fresh air. Go for a walk. And places that are still open and you can go for a shop. Although we focus on East Van, we'll be making friends everywhere and anywhere. Hi! We'll chat with skateboarders, athletes, dancers, artists, chefs, bakers, tailors, comedians, hey, you name it, we want it. See a familiar face or a familiar place right here on the Wham Bam East Van Show. Welcome, welcome, welcome. It's the Wham Bam East Van Show, the live version. That's right. We have our very first guest here live at the studio on top of the mountain on CJSF. And I just got to let you know that we are broadcasting on unceded Coast Salish territory in beautiful British Columbia on unceded Coast Salish territory. The Musqueam, the Squamish, the Tsleil-Waututh, and the Katsi Nation. All right. Today we have Brian Antonsen.
That's me.
Please introduce yourself.
Hello, my name's Brian. How do you like me so far?
Yes, we love you.
I'm very, very proud to say that 56 years ago, I put this radio station on the air at SFU.
That is so crazy to hear.
Yeah.
So you were a kid.
I was 18 years old.
You were just out of high school.
Yeah, first year university.
Yeah, and you actually had a little station in your house. Yes,
hobby radio.
A hobby radio.
We had that. Oh gosh, I started that 1964 or something like that. Mm-hmm. We had it in the hobby show. Speaking of East Van,
yes,
we had it in the hobby show at the P&E, which was a big thing in those days. In 1966 and 67, we won the first prize for the best exhibit in the hobby show at the time. And of course, then I was involved in starting the station here in the fall of 1966.
That's right.
Yeah.
And he just showed me the closet. It was the janitor's closet, folks, that started right here at CJSF, at SFU.
Yeah, CKSF, as we called it then. Right? And then it was called CSFU for a while, which is not a legal call sign. Mm. And then it's been CJSF for years.
Oh, yeah. I see. Okay.
Yeah, janitor's closet was, I think, about 11 feet wide and maybe 18, 19 feet long. And it was full of junk. Mm. And when we applied to the student council of the day, they said, you know, you can have this particular room if you want. And so we turned it into a radio station.
Yes, and you started it with three guys. Tell me about the other two.
Well, Rob Turner, mm-hmm. John Bishop, and I had all gone to Burnaby South High School.
Yes.
And so they were good guys. And one day I was maybe September, you know, late September. I was on the staircase leading up to the academic quadrangle, and I ran into them. And so we were talking about stuff. How are things going with you and whatnot? And they said, well, what are you doing? And I said, well, I want to get a radio station started here on campus. Mm-hmm. And they thought that was a wonderful idea. And so we talked about it for about 20 minutes. And then finally, Rob folded his arms and he looked at me and he said, so are we going to talk about this or are we going to do it? And I said, we're going to do it. So we went to the student council. We rented, but we didn't pay for it. But we got a room. Mm. And we put posters up all over the campus. which was nothing compared to the campus that it is today, you know, in terms of buildings and whatnot. But we put them up on all the walls and everything. We must have had 50 people show up for a founding meeting, and a lot of enthusiasm, and everybody wanted to do this. And so then we went back to the Students' Council and said, we've got all these people who want to make this happen. Mm-hmm. Could we have a place to do it? And they gave us the janitor's closet. And we said, we need some money. You know, we need to buy some equipment and so on. And they gave us $300. Mm. Now, I don't know what that would be worth today, but it was enough to buy a used audio console that didn't work, a microphone, what else? A couple of turntables for playing records, and a speaker and so on. So we set up in room 315, and then we ran a cable, just a speaker wire, out into the rotunda. And so early one morning, about 10 o'clock, in early November, we went on the air, as it were, just with this speaker, and blew the minds of all the people who were sleeping in the rotunda, you know. And it was a very quiet, cushy place, and people would sleep in there. They'd study in there and whatnot. And so we said, good morning, this is CKSF, and went on the air with some rock music and so on from the day. And I'm sure people did not like this happening, but we had enough people who wanted to do that, and we were on the air from 10 o'clock in the morning until 4 o'clock in the afternoon, 5 days a week, Monday through Friday.
That's right. And we're going to play Evan Kemp. This is Midnight Rider from 1957, folks, just to give you a taste of what it could have been or what it might have been back in the day.
Yeah.
Here we go. We'll be right back.
don't. There we do. There, yeah. There's mine.
Say that one more time.
Okay. I could say something like, that's Evan Camp with Midnight Rider from 1957. And then I go back into talking normally.
Yes, we were talking, but I got so excited I forgot to put our mics on. But anyways, he's a Vancouver rockabilly country singer. And I think he's already passed away. But
I believe so. Yes. But the connection with CJSF is that he owned our very first audio console, microphone, etc. And he was, he lived next door to Rob Turner, who was one of the three guys who got the whole thing rolling. And so Rob says, you know, my next door neighbor, he's a country and western guy. And I said, oh yeah, Evan Camp, I think I know of him. And so he said, he has this equipment, so we bought it from him.
Very good. Okay, so we're going to play another song, The Cascades. Tell me about them. They're from Seattle?
Yeah, The Cascades were from Seattle. They had two or three big hits back in 63, 64. My connection with them is that they were appearing here one night, and I just walked through the cafeteria, which is still there, loaded with chairs and tables and so on. And so they were playing here on a Friday night, so I stayed behind and met the guys and interviewed one of the guys and so on.
What?
Back in 60, it would have been the spring of 67 when they appeared here. Yeah.
Oh my goodness. Okay. Here's The Cascade, Rhythm of the Falling Rain, right here on CJSF 90.1 FM. Listen to that rain. Yes. I think it was a little bit kind of frosty. Coming up to the mountain, how was it? Was it just kind of foggy?
You know, coming up here, I suddenly ran into snow and slippery streets and so on. So, yeah.
That's right. So we have to be careful, folks. Yes, always kind of like watch where you're going when you're coming up to the mountain. And we've had buses like kind of, they couldn't get up sometimes. So
nothing's changed since 1966.
You know what? They're trying to put a gondola up here.
I know. Wouldn't that be cool? Yeah.
Yeah. They wouldn't have to deal with that. But we'll see what happens in the future.
For sure.
Yeah. All right. So next, we want to talk about the 60s. So back in the day, you listen to bands like The Cascades.
Yep.
Yeah, and who else did you like to listen to?
Well, 1966, of course, the Beach Boys were huge, and the Beatles were absolutely occupying. They had the top five songs. Mm-hmm. At one point in time, the Beatles had the top five songs on everybody's charts, and that was huge. Like, who had ever done that before? Elvis, none of them had ever done that.
Right.
It was the time of the British invasion.
Mm-hmm.
It was the time of some really exciting radio. The two stations in town that were fighting it out over the teen audience were CFUN, which had dominated for many years, 5-6 years, and then the new guys, CKLG. And CKLG, 7-3 CKLG, they took over, and they became the number one song. And then CFUN went into different directions and so on at the time. But we had, what, 7 or 8 stations in town at the time. FM was an also-ran. What does FM stand for? I don't know what it is. Is that like AM radio? It was all AM.
It was all AM.
And heavy news focus on some stations, and there was no sports radio, though everybody carried sports games. The Canucks did not exist. The BC Lions were huge, and so on. So it was a totally different media structure. But it was a lot of fun, and we had two very powerful rock stations in Vancouver.
Right. And I want to talk about how did you dress? Did you have long hair?
My hair at that time was not long, but a little bit later, it was down to my shoulders a lot of the time, and so on. Which was in keeping with the time.
Yeah.
Dress, a lot of jeans, blue jeans, of course.
Any bell bottoms?
Bell bottoms a little bit later. Yes, in the late 70s, late 60s, into the 70s. Everybody had bell bottoms and stuff like that, and cool shirts. I remember I had brilliant turquoise bell-bottom pants, and I'm walking down the hallway at CKNW once, and my program director says, "Boy, we can sure see you coming down the hall, can't we?" You know, and things like that. But that was the way people dressed.
Yeah, and then did you talk like, "Hey, groovy man"?
Yeah,
groovy man.
Well, I never got into that kind of stuff, but a lot of people did. Yes, a lot of people, peace symbols and so on, and we mock it these days. But you know, we were the first generation. I'm 74 years old, so a member of the baby boomers, right?
Yeah.
Born right after the Second World War. And we were the largest, and still are, the largest group of the largest demographic ever alive in the history of the world.
Mm-hmm.
And so we were going to change everything. We were going to get rid of war. We were going to get rid of corporate greed. We were going to take over and make the world anew.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we screwed it up big time, you know. we kind of imitated what our parents' generations had done and so on. But it's been a lot of fun along the way. And now there's new generations that are doing the same thing.
Right.
And I sit back and I say, yeah, wait till you get to be 30, you know, because everything changes.
My coworker asked a question about when you guys had the radio station when you started. Did you get all the girls?
Oh, you know, that was, I think, the object of a lot of people.
Yeah.
We had a few girls who joined the station,
mm-hmm.
and that was really, really neat to have them come on board. But no, I don't think, like the groupies and so on, they were going after rock stars, not after radio guys.
All right. We're going to play the Supremes. You Keep Me Hanging On. such a fantastic song. All right. Did you know Brian has actually written some books?
Yeah.
He's an author as well. So, Brian, tell me about, let's pick one of them. You want to do the first one?
Slumax Gold.
Yes. Yeah. Let's talk about that one first.
The Slumax Gold legend goes back to the 1890s. Mm-hmm. Slumac, you mentioned Catesy here earlier. Yes. Slumac was a Catesy fellow. And he murdered somebody and was hanged in 1891 for that murder. Within a very few years, there were rumors, stories, tall stories, legends, and so on, that built up around Slumac having a lost gold mine. Mm. And completely false, what we would call today fake news stories, occurred and were circulating in the early 1900s. About Slumac coming from the Pitt Lake area and throwing gold nuggets the size of walnuts around on the saloon floors. And so those those legends built up and built up and built up. And I first heard the legend when I was 9 years old at a summer camp, and we're sitting around a fire. And this old lady, she was probably 50. And I say that from the perspective of somebody who's in his 70s. This old lady was telling us stories. And we were just absolutely fascinated by that story. We said, when we grow up, we're going to go and find that lost gold mine. Well, of course, we realized somewhere along the way that we should not do that. But we could write a book about it. So we wrote, my brother and our colleague Mary Trainer and I co-wrote a book, a 56-page book, about the legend in 1972, and that sold 10,000 copies.
Wow.
We then sold, that gave us the go-ahead to get a publishing company going, and we had about 25 books or something like that, several bestsellers that that we published on behalf of ourselves and others. And and then we sold the company, we sold the rights and so on. And then the people who now hold the rights to the book came to us prior to the 35th anniversary and said, could you do an update? And so we said, yeah, sure. So the current book that's on the market is 160 pages. Mm-hmm. And it is now sold 14,000.
Wow.
So now you're talking 24,000. And a bestseller in Canada is 5,000, right? So we've sold almost 25,000 on this. And so we're working now on an update on that we hope will be around 240 pages and be kind of a capper to the whole thing. There have been two television series on this and so on. But still, after all these years, after 130 years and more, nobody has found the gold.
Oh.
So is the gold there or not? But Slumac Gold is big news, and it just goes on and on and on.
Unsolved mysteries, folks.
Exactly.
All right, now tell me about your other book.
Whistle Posts West.
Yes.
The first book, Slumac Gold, was so successful that the publishers said, hey, could you do another book?
Yes.
And we said, sure, what would you like us to do? And they said, you know, we don't have a train book on train stories. Mm-hmm. So we said, well, we all love trains, and so let's give a look at that. And we came back to them and said, yes, we can do a book on train stories for British Columbia and Alberta. So that's sold, I think, about 3,500, something like that so far. And there's about three dozen different articles or chapters in the book on train stories from BC and Alberta, all the way from, you know, the first surveying that was done through the people who actually built the railway, through funny stories, tragic stories, deaths on the railway, everything. It's really, I do presentations on these in various different community centers and whatnot, and people just love to hear the tales that that we can tell.
Excellent.
On that.
Yeah. And where can they buy these books?
Indigo, they're both Amazon.ca.
Yeah.
They're both available there. And in any good bookstore, we only sell in good bookstores. but, you know, any bookstore, and they can order them in. They can get them in. We've got about 800 left of Slumac Gold, and now we're working on another one. And I don't know how many are left of Whistle Posts West, but they're both very good books. And when we did Whistle Posts, for instance, we sent it out before we published, sent it out to railroad people and said, could you tell us whether we've got this right or not, because we think we have,
right.
And came back universally, yes, you guys nailed it. And
oh,
so
perfect.
On. So, yeah.
It's good to get the real deal.
Authoritative and, and reliable.
All right, next up we have a song called Pretty Thing by Trailer Hawk.
I've been watching you for hours.
And it's Trailer Hawk, my privilege to say that that was Trailer Hawk. And they're coming up on January the 21st. They're going to be appearing at the Fox Cabaret.
That's right.
With guest star, Robert Connolly Farr.
Mm-hmm.
And so tickets are $24 at Eventbrite. And that's coming up on the 21st of January in 2023.
That's right.
Which is a month and a half away.
Now, you taught at BCIT. You were the head honcho there.
Yep.
Yes. And one of your students was Todd McCluskey.
And he's on this very radio station. Yeah. As a matter of fact, that's how you and I got connected, because I saw one of Todd's posts. And I said, hey, Todd, I started that station in 1966. And then you contacted me and said, I watch you on the program.
Yes.
So it's kind of cool. Yeah. So Todd, he was in which class? It was late 80s, I think, that he was in the course. And away he went.
Yes. And what kind of a student was Todd? Was he a troublemaker?
We don't want to talk about that. Todd was a good guy, and probably still is.
Yes, he is. He is the master of disaster, and I'm going to play his show promo right now, The Blurred Crusade.
Oh, dude, yes.
Attention, Punk Rock Nation. Join your host, Todd McCluskey, every Wednesday at high noon for The Blurred Crusade. The best in punk and post-punk on CJSF 90.1 FM. Each week, tune into a delicious mix of tasty tunage, proto, classic, and post-punk. The Blurred Crusade, Wednesdays, noon to 1 on CJSF 90.1 FM or CJSF.ca. Join us as we dust off the crusty vinyl and get blurred.
Great promo. That's good. Good one.
All right. Now, I did an interview with a musician here in Vancouver. His name is Devours. He had a show at the SFU downtown campus. They did a show there, and I was able to do a quick interview there. So it's a pre-recorded one, so let's just play that one right now.
Welcome, Devours, to the Wham Bam East Fan Show on CJSF 90.1 FM. Please introduce yourself.
Hi, Linda. Hi, everyone. My name is Devours, and we are at the Small File Media Festival at SFU School of Contemporary Arts right now.
That's right. And we're here with Planet Devours, and we're talking to the leader, Nanu Nanu.
Devours.
Do you watch any sci-fi?
Oh, not a ton. I mean, I love X-Files. I love the original Alien. I don't watch a ton of sci-fi.
Okay. I was wondering where do you get your inspirations from? Because your music is very unique. You know what I mean?
Thanks. Yeah, so I think I got the inspiration when I went bald.
Oh, okay.
I just legitimately lost my hair about 6 years ago.
Yes.
And was like, you know what? I look like an alien. And I think that that was where some of the inspiration came from, because I call myself a Galian. And I've created this planet Devours. How creatively titled. But yeah, everyone there is gay, and it's basically like a gay utopia of artists.
Wonderful.
And but yeah, so the title, my last album was called Escape from Planet Devours.
Yes.
And it was meant to sort of mimic like an action blockbuster from the 90s and 80s, such as Escape from LA and Escape from New York. And so that was a little bit of like the angle of like my current album.
Okay, and let's talk about some of your songs. You're going to be performing tonight here. Maybe pick one and tell us about it.
Yeah, I'm going to play a bunch of stuff tonight from a few different albums, but mostly from Escape from Planet Devours. I'm playing a song called Grape Crush tonight. It's a ballad. I'm going to keep it mostly intense and upbeat tonight, but Grape Crush.
And it's grapes, yes.
Yeah, I was just eating grapes, actually. So it's apropos. Yeah, it's like a slightly optimistic song about aging and realizing that age is just a number, and that we can stay, like, we never get old unless we convince ourselves that we are old.
Exactly.
So, but yeah, a lot of my other songs are a little bit more sort of like, you know, they're about nostalgia, they're about like masculinity, they're about gay politics and love and heartbreak. And so, yeah, that's what a lot of my songs are about.
Yes, and you know, Evelyn 13, you're going to be doing a Twitch show with her.
Oh my God, wow.
Yeah, how do you know her?
We just met through the scene. We met through a local dark wave festival called Verboten.
Yes.
It happened in May this year. And Evelyn is amazing, really talented Twitch performer and DJ. Mm-hmm. And I think was DJing for that festival. And
that's so, right. Yeah. So, yeah, we look forward to seeing you on the Twitch there. And where can people follow you?
They can follow me on Instagram, devours.ufo. I'm also on Spotify, I'm on Facebook, I'm on Grindr, I'm on Christian Mingle, Match.com. Just kidding. But yeah, all over social media, you can find me. Yep.
Well, thank you so much, Devours, for coming on the Wham Bam East Fan Show. Wham Bam.
East Fan.
Yeah, yeah.
Is weak.
That song was beautiful. Oh my gosh.
Yeah, and I get to do the extra here. I could say that's DeVars. And as you said, he's doing his last two live shows this month. And that's really too bad because obviously the guy's got talent, but he's moving on to other things and so on. The first show is at the Queer Showcase. It is called Queer Showcase at the Fox Cabaret, mm-hmm. November 19th for Indie Fest. And the second one is, we were discussing, is it Renaissance or Renaissance? Or whatever. November 23rd. Okay. So November 23rd at the Red Gate Art Society. Okay. Too bad to see him moving off the live music scene. Mm-hmm. But everybody comes to different things, right?
That's right.
Move on to new things.
All right. We're going to get to a break. We're going to do a CJSF Heritage Minute. And then when we get back, we're going to get some tips on how to be a good programmer.
And now for a CJSF Heritage Minute. During the 80s and the 90s, CJSF would come into its own as a serious platform for independent artists and a forum for people to express ideas not present in the mainstream media. Summer 2002. CJSF receives a license from the Canadian Radio Telecommunications Commission to broadcast over the FM airwaves. February 13th, 2003, 7 p.m. CJSF goes on air at 90.1 FM, and we've been changing the sound of radio in Burnaby ever since.
All right, so what did you think about that, Brian?
Well, this is a heritage hour.
Yes.
Right? Because we're talking about 56 years ago when this station got started.
That's right.
That's kind of cool to see.
Pointing at himself, folks. Yeah. I'm the Heritage Minute right
here. Yeah, the white hair, you know, tells you about how much heritage there is here.
That's right. Now, you got some tips for future programmers, for people who might be interested in getting into radio.
Yeah. You know, the passion about this business and so on is really, really important. Mm. It is not the easiest business to get into, mm-hmm. And then to stay in. But I would say a few words. One is investment. Look at any training you take, mm-hmm. or any experience you're gaining at a station like this or whatever, as an investment in your future, in the long-term career plan that you may end up with. You know, a broadcast career. When I was going to BCIT as a student, people said to me, why would you go into a dying industry? There's no future in radio. Well, here we are five and a half decades later. Mm-hmm. Thank you very much. Radio did very well by me in my education career, in my actual career in the industry and so on. So look upon it as an investment in your future. Mm-hmm. I would then say practice, practice, practice. You know, how do I get to Broadway? Practice, practice, practice.
Yes.
And so do practice stuff. I'll be driving along listening to the radio and on comes a song and I'll say, hey, from 1965 that was. And my wife's now doing this, mimicking me. But you do it because you never know when you're going to be on the air again and doing something. And the other thing I would say, and I've taught people for decades, mm-hmm. develop a broad general knowledge. You never know who's coming through the door. You get a job in a small town, and the news director on your first day says, I'm sick. My voice is gone. You have to interview the mayor. Now, if you don't know who the mayor is, if you haven't done your research before starting at the station, if you don't know what the economic driver of that community is, forestry maybe, or tourism or whatever, then you don't know where to start. So develop a broad general knowledge about just about everything. If you're a guy and you're waiting in a dentist's office and there's a woman's magazine there, pick it up and read it. Mm. If you're a woman and you're waiting in the doctor's office and there's a men's magazine, pick it up and read it and learn everything you can because you never know when you're going to have to use that knowledge.
Mm-hmm. And then how about people who are shy and they have a fear of speaking? How would you approach that?
Yeah. A lot of people who are on the radio are shy and they're on the radio because nobody can see me and they don't know how short I am or how ugly I am. You know, I've got a great face for radio, but nobody knows that. So shyness is, I know a lot of people in the broadcast world who are quite shy, but boy, put a microphone in front of them and they come alive. So again, you can practice that. I was at an event here recently, and the husband of the hostess basically was sitting alone. Mm. And I thought, you know, if I, because he didn't know all the people, if I were him, I'd get up and say, hi, my name's Brian. Right. How come you're here? Mm. And it's easy to do that. And, you know, everybody wants to talk about themselves. Mm-hmm. So they don't want to talk about, it's easy to engage that. So how come you're here? And then they say, oh, well, I know somebody from such and such. Mm-hmm. So what do you do? And so you talk about what you do. And the good interviewer asks a question and shuts up. And lets the other person do the talking, right? Mm-hmm. And so I'd say to somebody who's shy, come in with half a dozen questions that you're going to ask and then listen to the response because you may be able to follow up with another question and so on. And it's really easy to start to come out of your shell.
Excellent. All right. We got a few more minutes here. We're going to play Leathers because we love to promote female artists here on CJSF. And this song's called Runaway right here on CJSF.
Yeah.
And that was Leathers with Runaway. And we have Joey Chaos, who interviewed her. And check out his show, Oh No Radio, right here on CJSF. All right, Brian, now let's talk about what you've been doing these days.
You know, I do a lot of things. We kind of were very, very cautious during COVID and so on, as so many people were. I'm back into doing live presentations, which I do on a variety of topics. I got about maybe 20 different topics that I do for various groups. I've got one we were discussing earlier on astronomy coming up. I do them. I'm a big King Arthur fan. Not the legendary King Arthur, but the real person behind the King Arthur stories, because somebody lived 1,500 years ago and did that. So I do presentations on that, on our books, on some. I've been very fortunate to travel a lot over the years, so I do things on my travels. I'm doing one on Monday on a trip to Kenya. So I do that sort of thing. That occupies some time in prepping material. Somebody said here when the Queen died, somebody who I do presentations for said, could you come to a tea on Monday, 3 days away, and do something on Queen Elizabeth? Yeah. So, you know, 3 days later, there I was with a fully prepared 60-slide presentation on the Queen. And so I find that very easy to do, and I love talking to an audience. And there were, I don't know, 60, 70 people in the audience or something like that.
And you said you've been to London.
My favorite city. I've been to England and London maybe a dozen times. Mm-hmm. Love London. Love the whole experience. I go back to the Tower of London and St. Paul's and Westminster Abbey. And people say, well, why would you go back to something you've already seen? Mm-hmm. Because it's just wonderful to be, to me anyway, to be in the ambiance of that, to soak up the history and so on. There's a place in Somerset. Mm-hmm. East or west of Stonehenge, called Cadbury Castle. It's an old hill fort. Mm-hmm. 1,500 years ago, it was occupied by a force of 1,000 men, and then women, children, and priests, and everything. Mm-hmm. And whoever was the leader was the prototype for the guy we know today as King Arthur. And so I've been to that place. It's just a big hill with a flat top and so on. But I've been there because the spirit of the, if his name was Bob or, you know, Tim, or maybe it's Arthur or Artur or something like that, is there. So, yeah, I love the British Isles and everything that's there. And I'm very cognizant of the history and how they were an empire built on slavery and all that sort of stuff. I'm very, very cognizant of that. But I love to go there and experience.
Mm-hmm. And do you drink tea with your pinky up?
No, I don't drink tea normally. No? I drink coffee.
You drink coffee.
But I've been known to quaff a pint or two when I, you know, I roll into a new town or whatever, and I go to a pub and I walk in and I say, I'd like a pint of your local bitter. And bitter is one of the many forms of beer. Mm-hmm. And I just love bitters. And some are better than others, better bitter. But, you know, I've not been disappointed by walking in and saying, I'd like a pint of your better bitter.
And do they have any bitter beer here in Vancouver?
Yeah, it's different.
It's different.
It's good, you know. Mm-hmm. It's not like American beer, which is very, very weak compared to Canadian beer. And British beer tends to be a little more, have a little more of an alcohol content. Mm. But it's a little more... Well, it's a little more bitter, and to my taste, it's great. I love it.
Very good. All right, we got maybe just like a minute, and then we're going to get to a song. We're going to end with, this one's called You Ain't Seen Nothing Yet. Tell me about Backman-Turner Overdrive.
Well, BTO, Backman-Turner Overdrive, Randy Backman and Fred Turner and so on, they started as the guests. Well, first of all, they started with a group called Chad Ellen and the Reflections in Winnipeg. Mm. And then they became the Guess Who. And they were huge stars back in the 50s, or sorry, the 60s, and then into the 70s. And then they moved on to other things, and they split up and whatnot. But the Backman brothers, Randy and Tim, really spent a lot of time, and I believe still live here on the West Coast. And at some point in time, as they were searching for a new name and a new group and so on, they started calling themselves BTO. So one of Canada's absolutely hugest rock groups, the Backman Turner Overdrive. And You Ain't Seen Nothing Yet is one of their biggest hits ever.
That's right. And You Ain't Seen Nothing Yet. I want to thank you so much, Brian, for coming on the Wham Bam East Van Show.
Been my pleasure to be here.
Wham Bam.
East Van.
Yeah, baby.
It's a hip-hop show called Next Up Right.